Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Monday, June 5th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, activists held rallies across the country over the weekend to call for more regulation of the firearms industry and greater public safety protections. We'll hear from the rally in Louisville. And Denver voters will decide on a new mayor tomorrow, but some city council seats also went to runoffs. We'll take a look at those races with CityCast Denver. After the BBC News headlines, we'll hear the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. On A Public Affair this morning, Transforming Divorce, a conversation with divorce strategist Erin Breeze. She works with mothers who are divorced or are in the process of divorcing. At 9 a.m., it's Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Joanne Cole will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still coming up. But first, the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Colorado will receive millions of dollars more from another drug company, the result of a class action lawsuit filed by 42 states. The latest disbursement amounts to about $2.5 million in settlement money from Individuor Incorporated. According to Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser, Individuor allegedly took advantage of the nationwide opioid crisis by maintaining a monopoly over its product Suboxone, which is used to treat opioid addiction. In 2016, the states filed a complaint against Individuor alleging that the company switched from a tablet to a film form of Suboxone to keep generic competitors from entering the market. The company had made this switch in 2010, claiming concerns over the tablet's safety. The agreement will go before a federal court in Pennsylvania for approval. The start of the first criminal trial resulting from the death of Elijah McClain has been pushed back. Colorado 17th District Court Judge Mark Warner agreed Thursday to postpone the trial of two former Aurora police officers in the 2019 death of McClain, a young black man who died after police forcibly arrested him and put him in a neck hold, and paramedics injected him with a powerful sedative. He died a few days later. The defense attorneys for officers Randy Redima and Jason Rosenblatt asked to reschedule the July 10th trial date to allow them more time to prepare. According to the Aurora Sentinel, the attorneys said they could not line up appropriate witnesses for a proper defense because prosecutors had not pinpointed whether the officers were directly responsible for the death or complicit with others' actions. In 2019, McClain was walking down a street in Aurora when he was stopped by police after a 911 caller had described the 23-year-old as, quote, sketchy. McClain was unarmed and had not been accused of a crime. The interaction with police escalated and he was forcibly restrained. In 2022, the coroner's office amended its original inconclusive autopsy report after receiving grand jury materials. It stated that McClain died from injection of the sedative ketamine. Judge Warner has not set a new court date, but asked prosecutors to provide more information about some of the charges against the officers. Separate trials are scheduled later this year for the paramedics and for a third police officer involved in the case. As of June 1st, all driver license offices in Colorado are able to offer a state license or ID to qualifying residents who lack federal immigration authorization. The milestone coincided with the 10-year anniversary of the Colorado Road and Community Safety Act. On June 5th of 2013, the bill was signed into law by then-Governor John Hickenlooper. DMV offices in Canyon City, Delta, Lakewood, Meeker, Salida, and Steamboat Springs are the latest to join the program, which issues what are now called standard driver's licenses and ID cards. Immigrant rights organizations celebrated the landmark legislation alongside Governor Jared Polis last week. According to the iDrive Coalition, over 200,000 Coloradans have been able to obtain their driver's license or permit through the program. Polis said the bipartisan law has helped undocumented residents to also obtain automobile insurance, making roads safer and keeping insurance premiums lower for all Coloradans. Colorado Representative Joe Neguse announced Friday that the University for Atmospheric Research, or UCAR, in Boulder will receive over $91 million in government funding to create a state-of-the-art climate radar system. The Airborne Phased Array Radar, or APAR, will take 3D images and capture climate data to help predict extreme weather events and better prepare communities for their arrival. UCAR's main partner for the radar project is Ball Aerospace. Thousands of Coloradans are expected to join anti-fracking events on Saturday as part of a nationwide plea to phase out fossil fuels sooner. Environmental groups and community organizations are planning the Phase Out Fracking 2030 Day of Action. 10 locations across the state will host events to urge federal and state officials to curb new oil and gas fracking limits. Activists say fracking is the main source of pollution contributing to climate crisis and air quality issues in the state. Local groups are also calling on the Biden administration to revoke decisions for the Willow Oil Pipeline project in Alaska and to declare a climate emergency to unlock measures that allow further development of clean, renewable energy sources. We had the wettest May in a decade and the fourth wettest on record, but it's June now, and the rain is expected to continue today and possibly through the week. The National Weather Service is warning that areas with poor drainage, such as urban environments, could be severely affected by heavy rainfall. They say Cameron Peak and other burn areas are especially vulnerable to flash flooding. Mostly cloudy with patches of fog this morning, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. In Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, a high near 72 and a low around 52. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Activists across the country rallied this past weekend to draw attention to gun violence in the United States. In Colorado, Governor Jared Polis signed a bill requiring all firearms in the state to be serialized, in effect, banning otherwise untraceable so-called ghost guns. The governor also signed a proclamation declaring the first Friday in June to be National Gun Violence Awareness Day in the state. Meanwhile, the Boulder County chapter of Moms Demand Action held their annual Wear Orange Day in Louisville, a day of remembrance for those affected by gun violence. KGNU's John Kellen prepared this report.
Hi, I'm Missy.
Hi, Missy.
I'm Katie. I haven't actually been to one of these yet.
Perfect.
So I'm just happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah. In Louisville's community park, members of the East Boulder County chapter of Moms Demand Action got ready for Saturday's Wear Orange rally by writing numbers. Some in chalk on the sidewalks around the park pavilion, others on dry whiteboards, the grim statistics of gun violence in America. 120 people killed every day, more than 40,000 killed each year, and more than twice that many wounded.
Wear Orange is a national event that is observed every June to honor Hadiyah Pendleton, who was a young black woman who marched in Obama's inaugural parade on January 1st, 2013. She returned to Chicago, and then a week later, she was shot and killed on a playground. So her family and friends commemorate her life by wearing orange, which is the color that hunters wear in the woods to protect themselves and others.
That's Judy Schreier, one of the event leads for the Moms Demand Action Rally.
We should not have to fear that gunshots can ring out while our children are at school, while we are at a grocery store, or with our family at a local neighborhood parade. Our children deserve better, and we deserve better.
The event in Louisville was one of dozens of Wear Orange events around the country this weekend. Speaking just before the rally began, Peggy Dara, the East Boulder County group lead for Moms Demand Action, made it clear that the issue is gun safety, not taking away the rights of responsible gun owners.
That's one of our stances. You know, we do support the Second Amendment. It's in our Constitution. You know, it's not going away. But, you know, we need to be smart about it.
Being smart about it, she says, means passing what she called common sense gun safety measures, like those recently signed into law by Governor Jared Polis.
This is really one of the critical issues of our day. I think you all know that. That's why you're here.
Jennifer Parenti is a 20-year military veteran and first-term Democrat representing District 19, which includes parts of Boulder County.
I was very proud to be part of the team that brought forward a number of pretty bold gun violence prevention bills this year. We were able to pass five. They are all now signed. Yes.
The new laws in Colorado include banning untraceable so-called ghost guns, expanding red flag laws, raising the minimum age to buy a firearm in Colorado to 21, and establishing a 3-day waiting period between the purchase of a gun and taking possession of it. A bill that would have banned assault weapons failed to pass, but several speakers at the rally said it remains a priority. In a statement marking National Gun Violence Awareness Day, President Biden said he's encouraged by the number of states passing common sense measures like assault weapons bans. Boulder County Commissioner Ashley Stolzman echoed that sentiment.
This group coming together today really symbolizes for me what next session brings, that we can get an assault weapons ban here in Colorado. And that's really important. And why that's important is because for us as a country to see change, we're going to need states to take the lead and lead the way. We have 10 states now in the District of Columbia that have passed assault weapons bans. Sadly, Colorado's not one of them.
Gun violence can happen anywhere at any time. But some of those at the rally expressed particular concern about gun violence in schools. 18-year-old Patrick Pethybridge is a recent graduate of Denver's East High School.
I am here with you today because I am not okay with how my high school experience was marred during my senior year. Let me tell you a little about it. My classmates and I experienced 3 shootings near or on school grounds.
The first of those in September turned out to be a terrifying hoax. 2 others did not.
In mid-February, my AP Spanish classmate, Luis Garcia, was shot in his car and then died from his injuries 16 days later. And in late March, my 4th grade classmate, Austin Lyle, wounded Deans of Culture Gerald Wayne Mason and Eric Sinclair hours before taking his own life.
Patrick is able to remember Austin Lyle with compassion, as someone whose life may have been saved if he'd been identified by the red flag law that at the time had not been passed. Patrick also told listeners a little about Luis Garcia.
I remember Luis showing his soccer jersey early last fall during a show and tell lesson in our Spanish class. He played so passionately right up until it won the 5A state championship last fall.
The 3 East High incidents galvanized Patrick Pethybridge and his classmates to demand that lawmakers take action.
That is why I testified in favor of the bill to institute a 3-day waiting period for firearm purchases, which will soon take effect as law and hopefully reduce homicides, and suicides. And the bill to prohibit assault weapons in our state, which sadly failed in committee.
He ended Saturday by reading a poem he'd been scheduled to read at an assembly interrupted by the wounding of the 2 East High administrators. He dedicated the poem, called Rallying Cry, to his graduating class.
Nothing will stand in our way as long as we are a cultural brigade. Thank you and God bless you.
For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
Denver's mayoral race is dominating the local electoral headlines lately, but what about Denver City Council? With contested runoffs in districts 8, 9, and 10, and many new faces already elected, this key branch of Denver's local government is poised for some big changes. Incumbents Candy Sedebaca, District 9, and Chris Hines of District 10 are both fighting to retain their seats, while District 8 is a battle between 2 new contenders. But these votes are about more than who gets on to City Council. They could lead to a major ideological swing and a new approach to how lawmaking gets done in the Mile High City. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies and producer Paul Caroli break down the races and talk about what's at stake ahead of tomorrow's Election Day.
Now, there still are five members that are going to stay on that won their seats a couple of months ago. This is Amanda Sandoval, Kevin Flynn, Jamie Torres, Amanda Sawyer, and Paul Cashman. We also elected three new members of council back in April. Diana Romero Campbell won in District 4, and then the at-large seats were won by Sarah Parody and Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez. That leaves four new members to be decided. Now, one of those is a specific situation, which I think we should probably start with, but all four of these are very interesting in District 7, 8, 9,
and 10. Yeah, for sure. I think the one that we're going to talk very briefly about is District 7, which was between Flor Alvidrez and formerly Nick Campion. But what happened in that race, Paul?
Well, that was a wide, wide open race, so no candidate got 50%. So we did go to the runoff, but the second place finisher, Nick Campion, he decided like 2 weeks after the election in April that he didn't want to do it. He didn't even want to try. Flor Alvidrez will win as a result. She will be on city council. She hasn't technically been elected yet, but she will win. And if anyone doesn't know about Flor, she's a really interesting person. First generation Denverite, grew up in her district, daughter of a Mexican immigrant who worked in construction. She is the part owner of her family's concrete company, and she runs a real estate business. And that seems like a really big priority for her is helping out small businesses. So on key issues like housing, her main priority when she's coming on to council is going to be to remove regulations and to streamline the permitting process and also to allow ADUs, accessory dwelling units, in her district.
So let's get into the races that are up for grabs.
We did seven. Now we're going to do eight. This is Chantel Lewis taking on Brad Revere. And District 8 is sort of in the northeast part of the city, Central Park, Northfield, that area.
So we'll start with Chantel Lewis, former RTD board member. When she ran for that seat, her big thing was lived experience. So she's a bus rider. She currently works for the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless. She's really big on housing. Her approach is social housing, looking at different ways that the government can own housing, as well as just expanding the affordable housing stock in general. She is part of that progressive left slate. Candy Sathebaca is currently the only member on council at this moment who sort of is part of that group. But Sarah Parody, who's coming in at large, was part of this slate. Shannon Hoffman, who we'll talk about later, is on this slate as well. This is the neighborhood, or this is the district that had the Park Hill Golf Course in it. I thought that was an interesting thing to look at for these candidates.
Yeah, where'd she fall on this?
She said no on lifting the conservation easement.
Tell me about Brad Revere.
Yeah, very similar. I think the biggest difference here, too, is he's really supported by the businesses in the area. He runs Colorado Succeed, which is a nonprofit group of business leaders who are working on education issues. He also is a transit guy. He was on the mayor's pedestrian and bicycle advocacy committee. So he's really about transportation equity. What I find, like, again, it's very small differences here. Chantel's really on public transit. And he talks about that as well. But he's also on pedestrian infrastructure and bicycle infrastructure. He also supports affordable housing, ADUs, also supports the STAR program. So the interviews that both of these candidates did for the Denver Post, which asked them the golf course question, was asked in March. So this was pre-vote. Pre-vote, Brad said that he did support lifting the easement. So he was in support of the development of the golf course. So that would be the main difference where these two candidates landed. But I would say they are pretty similar on most issues in their district.
Okay.
Next up, we have District 9, which is the incumbent, Candy Sathebaca, against Daryl Watson.
So District 9 is the most interesting race on the ballot, for sure. It was very tight in the first round. There were three challengers. I think there were a lot of people who thought that Daryl Watson and the other main challenger, Quan Atlas, were going to maybe split the vote and that Candy would be able to hold on to her seat. Not the case. A lot of the opposition to Candy, you know, she's sort of been alone on council, but that meant a lot of opposition has formed around her, formed against her. So that opposition is consolidated around Daryl Watson. He won 42.9% of the vote in the first round. She won 44.2%. So very, very close. And that's really the story here, is like Candy is this left progressive firebrand. She unseated one of Hancock's, Mayor Michael Hancock's closest allies on council 4 years ago, Albus Brooks. And ever since, I think his supporters, developers, more of the like establishment type power centers in the city have been waiting for an opportunity to support a candidate to take her on. So he was the biggest fundraiser of all the city council candidates through the whole cycle. He's got endorsements from people like former Mayor Federico Pena, former Governor Roy Romer, current council members, Debbie Ortega, Chris Herndon, Jolynn Clark, as well as Denver firefighters. As for who he actually is and what he supports, I did not know much about him. I learned that he's one of these guys that's like on a zillion committees. He's been on dozens of like city and state committees, parks and rec committees, housing equity committees. But professionally, it seems like his job is a communications consultant. But as for like the other policy differences or like what they support, they both agree on expanding STAR. Watson says he wants to be collaborative with police. That's a difference with Candy. She's definitely more critical.
Big difference.
She has been a champion of police reform and has consistently kept up calls for that since the summer of 2020. On housing, both focus on housing affordability. Watson supports the affordable housing measure that requires developers to pay into a city fund that we passed last year. Candy really focuses on that lower band of the AMI, the area median income spectrum. She's focused on stopping displacement, stopping gentrification, and supporting the members of or the people who live in her district that have been affected by those trends.
And I think it's interesting to note that this District 9 has changed a little bit since redistricting, since Candy was elected last time. Mm-hmm. This district no longer involves or includes downtown Denver.
Yeah, I think that's actually a huge factor here, too, because Candy, based on the map of how the votes went down in the first round, Candy won a lot of her votes up in the north part of the district in Globeville, Elyria, Swansea, whereas the closer you got to downtown, Daryl Watson seemed to get stronger and stronger. The more affluent, the more closer to the power centers, that's where Daryl Watson was. So I bet if it still included downtown, I don't know, maybe he would have an easier road here, but that does not seem to be the case. I think this is going to be a close one. But we've got one more to talk about. Bree, District 10.
Yeah.
You want to tell us about District 10?
Sure. It's incumbent Chris Hines against newcomer Shannon Hoffman. District 10, again, the redistricting conversation. This district covers downtown, Cap Hill, the Country Club neighborhood, Cheeseman Park, Bel Caro. I mean, we're talking, again, wide variety of incomes. I think the most interesting thing to me that's showing itself in this race is the renters versus owners kind of conversation.
Hmm. Okay.
Shannon Hoffman is her biggest platform to me, other than this. She's really been vocal around repealing the camping ban. She's very against the sweeps. But the other big thing is tenants' rights. She's really run this platform like she's a renter. She doesn't feel like renters are equally represented on council and in city conversations in general. Shannon, also, again, a political newcomer. She's part of that progressive slate of candidates we've been talking about, endorsed by the Democratic Socialists, DSA. She's been endorsed by Working Families Party and some union organizations. I think her biggest criticism of her challenger, Councilman Hines, is that she says he's beholden to developers and doesn't listen to his constituents. He's kind of pushed back on that and said, well, we'll get more into what his side of it is in a minute. But I think there's a really big thing here that's also different is that she, when it comes to public safety, she is a self-proclaimed abolitionist. And she told Denverite that that basically means to her diverting money from police toward other departments to respond to public health issues. That's kind of where she stands.
Okay.
So when it comes to Hoffman's criticism of Hines about building and developer, she says he's the developer-backed candidate. During the 2020 protests, he was very vocal about defunding the police, but he has since changed his mind and says he wants to expand STAR, but wants to also expand police staffing. I thought the most interesting thing to me was that he was endorsed by the Denver GOP, as well as, again, this is a nonpartisan position. These are nonpartisan races, but he was also endorsed by former Democrats or at least Democratic leaning mayors like Webb and Pena. Outgoing council members Kenich, Ortega, Clark, and Kendra Black have also endorsed him. The other big difference here is he supports the sweeps, upholding the sweeps. So I think that would just be another. Again, I think the sweeps and safe injection sites are two big issues for this downtown district. So I think those would be the two big determining factors. But they both support more affordable housing. He's a really big advocate for pedestrian infrastructure. Folks will know he's a person who uses a wheelchair. So he's been an advocate around disability work, accessibility of spaces and things like that. So I think this is an interesting race. They're two pretty different candidates. And but it wasn't super close. I mean, it was Shannon got 27%. And he got 35%.
Yeah, she sort of eked into the runoff. There was a third candidate who also did quite well, who she beat by like a couple of hundred votes. So I think that you'd say that Chris Hines is still the favorite to win here, but you never know.
We'll see.
That's all for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Benita Lee, John Kellen, Alexis Kenyon, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's A Public Affair with Sam Fuqua. That's just after the news headlines from the BBC.